Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Rob Dukes from Generation Kill, and you are listening to Mark Strigl and Talking Metal.
This is Jamie Ross from Like It, and you're listening to Talking Metal. That's right.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. This is John Astronomy along with Mark Strigl. Hey Mark.
Hey John, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, we're looking at each other on the Skype cameras, and you got a Mets hat on. Are you a Mets fan now?
I'm a fan of all sports. Okay, I'm joking. No, I am a Mets fan. I'm a Yankees fan and a Mets fan. Most New Yorkers probably would think that that's blasphemous, but
yeah, you got to be one or the other.
You got to be one or the other. But
I'm the same way. I've been to Mets games. I prefer the Yankees, but I'm not one of those people who like want to fight. You know, over.
Yeah.
I once had a Mets sweatshirt that I wore, and I'm more of a Yankees fan. But I like you. I kind of like both. I had this guy. He wanted to fight me because I had a Mets sweatshirt.
I know. Believe me, I'm almost afraid to wear the hat now. But I went to a Mets game and I bought a Mets hat, and there's a couple of funny stories about the hat. But the thing is that I am now slightly nervous because I'm worried that some Yankees fan is going to flip out on me or something.
No, it could happen.
Yeah, I know. Seriously, it's nuts. I got to wear like a Pirates hat or something.
I was at a Subway Series game, which means in New York, when you hear Subway Series, it means the Mets versus the Yankees. And not the World Series, which they had at one point a number of years back, probably over a decade at this point. But it was just a special Subway Series game. And I saw one of the most brutal fights in the audience at that game, like blood and everything. It was pretty crazy. Yeah. But anyways, we have Mr. Rob Dukes on the show today, former Exodus vocalist, current Fragile Mortals vocalist and also Generation Kill vocalist, and such a great voice on this guy. We were very fortunate, John, because we got to do some jamming with him.
I always watched that video that we did for one of our newer versions of Talking Metal, and that is one of my favorite jams that we did with Rob.
Absolutely. It was actually, there's two of them, John. There was Snowblind.
Right, that's the one I was referring to.
Yeah, we did the Black Sabbath cover, Snowblind, which I'll put that up in today's show notes, the YouTube version of it. And also we did Seek and Destroy.
Right.
Yeah, going way back. I guess that was like late 2007 or maybe actually early 2008, I think. Yeah. We did Seek and Destroy with Rob Dukes. That was when he was in Exodus, and Rob did some great work with Exodus. No longer a part of Exodus. We've already heard that story many times on previous Talking Metal interviews and also on Mitch LaFon's show and all over Blabbermouth. I didn't really feel like there was a reason to kind of revisit the Exodus drama in this interview with Rob. This was more to talk about what he's up to now, which is some exciting stuff. It's basically a new band, which is Daryl McDaniels from Run DMC and the group Generation Kill. And when these two groups come together, they form a whole new band and go under the name Fragile Mortals. Does that make sense?
There you go. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, cool. So I tell you what, let's get right into this interview with Rob. This is a song called Suicide. It is available on iTunes by Fragile Mortals, featuring Rob Dukes, formerly of Exodus, and Daryl McDaniels of Run DMC, and a bunch of other guys, including Rob Machete, who was recently on a Talking Metal episode. So let's get right into a sound sample of this. It's an epic song, like 8 minutes long, called Suicide. Go to iTunes to buy the full version. Again, this is Suicide by Fragile Mortals featuring Rob Dukes. And then we'll get into my interview with Rob Dukes.
Everything that you need. Remembrance of days forgotten. Point that bullet right at my brain. Aim that needle right at my vein. All my friends, they
Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and checking in with us on the line, we have from Generation Kill and Fragile Mortals, Rob Dukes. Rob, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you, brother?
Good, good. It's great to talk with you again, especially since there's such big news going on here with Fragile Mortals. There's two songs now out on iTunes. We just heard about half, that was only half, guys, of the epic song Suicide. Just a monster track. And I guess let's talk about that track specifically and
okay.
The writing process of that. Obviously, I'm hearing your parts. I'm hearing Daryl's parts. Daryl, of course, Daryl McDaniels, DMC. Well, how do you guys come together and start writing together, like a song like that? It seems like it has like some real personal stuff in it and some deep emotional stuff. How do you connect to write a song like that?
First, usually, like, what we do is we, you know, the boys will send me some riffs, and then we'll put together some riffs, and I usually, because I live in Phoenix now, I fly to New York, and we'll get into a room, and we'll just hash out skeletons, and we'll get, you know, okay, this is going to be a chorus, this is a verse, and, like, they've already sent it to me on CD, so, like, we just put it all together, and then once we get, like, a real good skeleton of a, you know, not including intros, outros, solos, just basically the verse and chorus together, then we figure out how many times it's going to roll around, and then we'll make a demo, like a you know, pre-production of it. And then we decide what we're going to sing about, you know what I mean? Daryl had some ideas, I had some ideas, like we shared back and forth some things. Honestly, I don't really remember where this one started. I assume it started with him because he had a book coming out, and his book is called 10 Ways to Not Commit Suicide. And basically, it's about his life with, you know, Run DMC and how he has been suicidal for a long time. And, you know, when we first started talking about writing the song, I admitted to him, I go, yeah, dude, I battle that same shit I did for years. You know, I mean, it comes and goes. It's always like this irrational depression that I sometimes fall into and half my whole life, you know, I suffer from it medically. It's a, you know, medical condition. My dad has it. It's hereditary. So anyway, we talked and when we first became friends, we kind of like did a 2-hour phone session one day and just, you know, kind of, you know, talked about where we came from and stuff. But anyway, so that's really how the song came together. And then all my lines were personal. And then there was also a story in my head of a guy who was just, you know, he had a family and he was miserable and he made them miserable and how much, you know, pain he brought just by being this guy who was so alone.
Right.
And he had this wife and kids, and it was just, and that was the horrible story in my head. And then my own experiences I used, here and there to bring the realism to it and try to make it real. And Daryl told me, he goes, yeah, I wrote that shit that was, you know, all about me and my life and, you know, people I've met along the way. And I'm like, yeah. And that's how it came together. So.
Right on. Well, it's a great epic song. It's on iTunes now.
Thank you.
It really just came out on iTunes along with All Fired Up, another song that you guys put out. Now, so are you going to release it like song by song or are these
No, these are like teasers, man. They were, you know, we had, honestly, they were supposed to be like not come out together, but it ended up that way because of management. I mean, we just, at this point, it's just, it wasn't supposed to happen that way, but it did. So, whatever, it's out there. So the two songs are out there, and we have a full length album. It's going to come out later this year. We're still we're still doing the artwork, and we're still doing the some of the other stuff. The record's basically done, recorded, and done. We're just doing the artwork and the finalizing and trying to put it together in a cool package for people to get. We want to do some vinyls, and we want to do, you know, of course, some physical CDs. But for mostly it's going to be a digital thing. I mean, cause that just seems the way the world's going. So, but for those people that do want, you know, hard copies or vinyl, we're going to make that. And so we Daryl, you know, Daryl's a big comic book guy, and he has a comic book and I have a comic book. So we got a couple artists from those worlds to do our artwork, and we're having all. So we have, you know, we have some really cool designs and stuff going on in our
cool
for what's going on with it. Yeah.
So, a couple things. You have released these two singles, and I'm guessing the album is probably coming out in this label too, on Bumblefoot Music. So is that correct? The whole album will be released through Bumblefoot's label?
At this point, yeah. We haven't signed anything yet. We're still in the midst of dealing with lawyers and contracts and stuff like that. So we're still in the middle of it. We're finalizing all that stuff, just, you know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, you know, making sure everybody's covered. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I mean, because that sounds like a smaller label to me, obviously. Was there any interest with you guys in approaching bigger labels, or were you looking for more of
We didn't really try. We really wanted to just keep this to ourselves. We were like, you know what, man? Daryl comes from a world with big labels. You know, I've been on a big label, and we just, the experience, the world's changing, and the world changing, and the ideas that they had long ago don't really work for today. You know, there's nothing that they could have done for us that would have been anything that we couldn't just either hire someone to do for ourselves, or we paid for the album, we paid for the production, we paid for the studio time, we flipped the bill for the artwork, you know, we did all that ourselves. So, you know, why, you know, I mean, we don't really need a label. We just needed, you know, somebody to, you know, basically distribute it. And, that's kind of where we're at this point, is we just have a distributor. So
you don't think having like a label would help with like press and promotion and stuff like that?
Well, you know what I mean? Like they have it all in house. I mean, honestly, it's such a dinosaur industry, and it doesn't favor the artist at all in any way, shape, or form. They, you know, basically give you a really bad loan at a really bad interest rate, and you never really, unless you sell a shit ton of records, you're not going to ever pay it back. And so, you know, they retain all the rights, and they get the masters for years, and you never. And you really basically lose it's your music, and you don't have any right to it. It's theirs. They bought it from you, and you signed away your rights. So basically what we did was we didn't do it that way. You know, we didn't want their bad loan. And plus, honestly, with the last Generation Kill record, We're All Gonna Die. I had met this guy, and he had given me such beautiful and crazy photographs he had thousands and thousands of historic photographs and photographs he took, and just crazy, just really artistic and weird shit.
Right.
And the label would let us do it. And they made us change what we wanted. We didn't want the cover that they gave us. The cover was a black and white photo that I saw in the New York Times, and it was just a photo that a guy had taken, and it was at in Mount Vesuvius, but it was across this Greece, the ocean or the sea there,
right?
And it was a people in a church. They'd ran into this church to hide from this volcano erupting, thousands of years ago.
Yeah,
and it was like, you know, and they got. And they got, but instead, like in Pompeii, it was like a whole body, but was a flame first, so it burned everybody. So it was just skeletons. And if you see the cover of that, it was just supposed to be that one haunting photo.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, it needs this border of skulls around it. It doesn't look great. And it just, they fought us on every little fucking thing, man. It was just like, you know what, man? Like, I don't fucking need you, man. Like, fuck off. I just, now it's a digital world. I could just put it out myself, and, you know, it is what it is.
Right on.
People buy it, they buy it. They don't, you know, whatever. Yeah. So, right. Anyway.
So you think
on a tangent.
No, that's cool. It's good. So you're thinking late this year? I mean, we're already in July of 2016.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
so.
We were looking at late October or November, and if it doesn't do that, then it would be then February or March. You know what I mean? We've played a couple shows, and we have a couple shows coming up. We're playing a couple festivals this summer, and just kind of getting our feet wet into stuff. And we really wanted to like kind of tackle it next year and try to, you know, and. You know, I don't know if we're like going to do like a small little club thing. I think we're just going to kind of do things here and there. And I don't really know. I honestly don't know what the future holds, which is kind of cool because I'm like, you know, I'm just a regular dude. I got a, you know, a regular job and, you know, so, if, you know, like, hey man, you might have quit your job and go on tour. I don't really know if that's going to happen, but I would,
right.
You know, it'd be cool. But I have zero expectations, dude. That's really what I have is we really just, you know, meeting Daryl and doing what we've done. It was just an experience, and really, that's really what life has become, just a bunch of experiences. You can either choose to enjoy them, embrace them, or hate them and fucking fight them. And what I did was I just embraced my whole, what are the fucking odds that I'm going to fucking run into the guy from Run DMC? Yeah. We're going to exchange information. Then we're going to talk on the phone later and decide to write some music together.
Right, right.
Then turn that into an album. And then realize that we're basically the same fucking people. We have these same problems. We both suffer from the same kind of depression and shit. And like, we both had like, you know, life growing up wasn't that easy, and you know, I mean, it was just,
yeah.
You know, and we both had this kind of fame. I mean, of course, he's a fucking icon. He's an icon. He's a legendary icon. Like he will live forever in the halls of you know, American.
Yeah,
he's an. You know what I mean? Like he's, and the fact that guy would fucking call me and hang out with me and want to make a record with me, just made me. It blows my mind, dude. It blows my mind that I'm
in
this situation.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm truly eternally grateful, and whatever happens, happens, and whatever happens, doesn't happen. I don't give it, you know, I made the record. I listen to it all the time. I play it for my friends, and I you know, I sent it to my dad, and I was, Dad, I'm so stoked about this, and he said, I'm so proud of you, and that was kind of cool, and you know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
You know, that's really what this was all about. It had nothing to do with anything else, and that was a nice feeling. There was no, we have no fan base, because the metal fans are going to hate it. And the fucking rap fans are going to hate it. So we're like, fuck, man. We're alienating everybody at this point. So, you know, fuck it. Let's just make ourselves happy. And that's what we did.
Right. Well, it sounds the right attitude to have. Now, a couple things that you mentioned that I just wanted to circle back on. Festival dates, have those been announced yet?
Yeah, we're playing August, I think, 7th or 8th in Pennsylvania, Reading, Pennsylvania, at the Music Fest.
Okay,
and then
cool.
We're playing the Kearney Rock in Jersey, October 31st with like Clutch and Twisted Sister and Overkill and a bunch of other bands.
That's been announced.
Yeah.
I didn't. Okay, that's October 1st, right?
Well, yeah, it's three days, man. It's
it's
the 29th,
it's the 30th,
and 30th, something like that. Yeah, it's one of that stuff. So
awesome.
We're doing that too. So
cool. What night are you playing for that?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'm going to be there the first day because I'm going to go hang out with Clutch.
Okay, so. Cool. Yeah, I'll be there that day. I'll be there the 30th and the 1st for sure.
Yeah, so you're going to definitely see us. So,
Well, I know it's going on Sunday. Yeah, Sunday will be a little bit tougher for me, but hopefully you guys are playing either on the 30th or the 1st. If not, I'll try to get down there for the 2nd.
You better be there.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Comic book. You said you have your own comic book. I know Daryl has his own comic book, and I mean, I know you pretty well, but I didn't know you have your own comic book. Tell me about that.
Yeah, man. I made a comic book a few years ago called I Am Become God. It was about a serial killer, and I did it with a small little comic company, and it was a short story I wrote, and it was supposed to be a 3-trilogy comic thing, and they did like the first section, and then I never got to do the other two because the company kind of just folded and the people all just kind of disappeared.
Okay.
It was kind of weird. They just kind of like, I just never heard from him again. It was kind of weird. And like, his own brother doesn't know where he is. Like, me and his brother are friends. He's like, yeah, I don't know where he is, man. He's fucking just out. Oh, all right.
Oh.
So, you know, so that was kind of how that went. But it, I still have the first one. It's, you know, I have like 5 copies of myself, and I framed one, put it in my house. It's kind of cool. Yeah. So anyway.
Cool. Rob Machete told us Generation Kill is currently working on stuff. What's the status of that?
Yeah, we have like 5 songs that are kind of like skeletonized. When we were out in New York, we kind of went through some riffs and kind of jammed a little bit. And I'm going to go on out there. We're playing the Opie and Anthony show. Next Monday.
Oh, so really?
Me and Daryl doing an interview with Opie and Jimmy, and then Opie and Anthony. Oh, the Opie and Jimmy show.
And then
we're gonna play. We're gonna play a couple of songs. So, yeah, they invited us. They're Fat Immortals to play. I don't know if we're playing like in the room next door and that big fishbowl thing where like when. You know, I don't know the details. I know I'm flying there on Friday, and then we're gonna rehearse and we're gonna work on a bunch of new G Kill stuff while I'm there, because I'm gonna be there for like 3 days, and then go there and then go and do these shows, and I fly home, home after that. So
cool.
So I'll be able to come home with at least like a demo to like start writing lyrics and like. You know, I always write lyrics. Like, I constantly write stuff, and I write a ton of short stories and stuff. So, like, you know, they're just ideas, and I just put them on paper, and then sometimes I cultivate them, and sometimes I don't. And then sometimes they turn into lyrics, and then sometimes they turn into just stuff I, you know, show my wife or, you know, hey, check this out.
Yeah, right on, right on.
She goes, oh, you're twisted. Yeah.
So. Right. Well, speaking of twisted, I want to get into a song called Lot Lizard right now. And this song was originally released as DMC and Generation Kill. And I think even on the iTunes version, I think it says featuring Bumblefoot or something like that. So this song, I'm assuming, will be re-released as Fragile Mortals.
It'll be on the record. Yeah. Right, cool. Basically, like, we didn't know where we were at. We were kind of like, at the time, it was just like, that was supposed to be, it's like, when I first met Daryl, he was like, hey, let's write a song together. That was the song we wrote.
Right.
You know what I mean? That was the first song. So I was like, oh, okay. So that's what we did. And then after that, we were kind of stoked. So we were like, hey, let's do some more. And then we wrote some more, you know? So, and it ended up being an album, and we ended up enjoying each other's company, and everyone had a constantly laughing and having a good time, and, you know, wrote some good songs that we liked, and you know, like we said, we basically just put Lot Lizard on iTunes, like, yeah, there it is, and never really, you know, didn't really talk about it or anything. We just kind of kept working, and we didn't really, we didn't really have any expectations or know what we were going to do. Lot Lizard's fun. Good song.
Yeah, right on. So we are talking, of course, with Rob Dukes, the ex-singer of Exodus, the current singer of Generation Kill and Fragile Mortals. We heard Suicide coming into the interview. Right now we're ending with Lot Lizard, another Fragile Mortals song. Both songs on iTunes, and then there's also another song called All Fired Up, which is a great tune. I love that tune. So, Rob, great talking with you, and I'm always anxious to hear what you're up to, because you're always producing good stuff for us. So let's keep in touch. I hope to see you. Let's hang down at the Rock Carnival in New Jersey.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm psyched. I didn't realize you guys are doing that. It's going to be great.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And tell the wife and kids hello, and I hope they enjoyed the new Star Wars. I did.
Yeah, so, yeah, man. I'm watching season 2 of Rebels now. Have you gotten into that?
Not yet. Yeah, I've been saving it.
It's
I've been watching Preacher lately.
Yeah, season 1 was okay, but season 2 of Rebels is really worth watching. I'm like halfway through it. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a little kiddy, but it's good.
Yeah. So was Clone Wars is like that too.
Yeah.
What have you watched Preacher? Did you read that graphic novel?
I read it many, many years ago. Yeah, but I have not watched it. It's good.
The show is incredible. It's so good, man. Yeah. Okay. It's really, really good. So,
all right, I will check it out. Definitely
check that one out. All right, brother.
Good tip. Thanks, Rob. All right, man. Hope to talk to you soon.
All right, brother.
All right, cool.
Thanks. Later. Peace. 15 when she left her home. Had enough devil's cock. You don't need a condom, 'cause she's the queen of the truck stop. She's got holes in her face, like the holes in her socks. A jailhouse tramp stamp and track marks on her box.
I met a rock lizard down on Route 66. I know it ain't my business, but she's someone's little sis. The life she is living, it is hard as it gets. She never gets a break, she always gets in lots of shit. She's just like a mama getting pimped by a boss. She spends all her time working out of all her truck stops. Cock-a-doodle-doo with her mouth full of cock. Her life really sucks, so the sucking never stops. Truck stop slut. She avoids getting busted, but she busts a lot of nuts. She got crazy skills and she's bringing in big bills. But the way she is living, it is gonna get her killed. She had a run-in with some psycho trick. He tried to slit her throat, she cut off his. Did you hear what happened in the lot last night? When it all goes wrong, she still thinks it's all right.
That was Lot Lizard by Fragile Mortals featuring Rob Dukes, and that was a great interview.
Yeah, thanks, John. It's always fun talking with Rob. He's on the show frequently, and just a great addition to Talking Metal. I'd say definitely at this point he's part of the Talking family. Metal family. Yeah, for sure.
Remember that time that we met Rob at Circus?
Yeah,
I believe that was Circus.
I mean, there's been so many interviews with him. A bar called Circus, which was on 9th Avenue. It's since closed down. It was a great spot.
I love that place.
Rob came down, and of course, Rob doesn't drink, and he hung with us at this bar, which is really cool. I always give props to people who don't drink but still can go hang at a bar.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Because I've had other people who have had alcohol issues in their life in their past, and they will refuse. They won't even step foot in a bar, you know. So I don't know why, but Rob, he met us in the bar and hung with us and gave. That was one of our first. Actually, that wasn't. There's been so many interviews. Remember, you interviewed Rob once backstage at an Exodus show without me.
Yeah, I remember that. That was the time I had one of those skateboarding accidents, and I think I had like Band-Aids on my face or something. It was really funny.
Yeah, and then we interviewed him at the Gibson showroom. And there's been so many interviews with Rob. He's come to my house to do interviews numerous times. So,
very cool.
Yeah. A big shout out to Rob Dukes. Go support him and check out Fragile Mortals. And of course, also Generation Kill. Good stuff. Anyways, John, so you just ran in here or ran to Skype to do this podcast. You were in rehearsal. And so who are you playing with now?
Okay. So I am jamming with a band that I loved back in the day when I first started playing out in the scene in New York, and this is a band called Like It. Now, I was in a group called Cherry Red that later became the Minx, where Emily was the lead singer for the Minx. So we all kind of know each other. But what happened was Cherry Red was opening up for Like It, and I was playing drums at the time, and I remember calling the drummer, who is Mike Lincoln, who plays with Captain T and Astronomy, and at the time I go, "Can I use your drum set?" And he said, "Well, but there's a giant like flower on the bass drum and it says Like It." I said, "That's all right. I don't care." So that was my first interaction with Like It. And then Like It is rounded out by Jamie Ross, lead vocalist and guitar player, and Dave Messenger on bass. Now, back in the day, the guitar player was Jerry Sunshine, who was a super great guitar player.
From Japan, right?
From Japan, right.
Yeah, he's a Japanese guy, and he was so flamboyant, I guess is the word. Yeah. And what's another word, John? Just like he had so much going on. He was a showman, I guess.
Great guitar player, great showman. Yeah. Like tear down to his waist, like a total like rocker.
Yeah, and had all the hard rock and rock faces and good guitar player. And so my version of the Like It history, which, you know, aligns with yours, John, is that, I saw those guys probably at that show you're referring to where you were playing with them, because I was probably there to see you play with Cherry Red. And I was blown away by them. And I honestly thought that out of all those East Village, now the East Village guys is a neighborhood in New York City that, you know, back in the 90s and even back in the 80s and 70s was kind of like the cool rock neighborhood, punk rock more so than metal. But, you know, rock and roll, sleaze rock, you know, type of vibe. And I always thought that Like It stood out from all the other bands. The one band that kind of got a little steam, well, there was numerous bands like Helmet came out of the East Village, but they weren't sleazy like
New York Dolls type.
They were kind of from a different, they were more like the NYU like alternative crowd, but Degeneration came out of this scene that included bands like John's band Cherry Red and Like It that we're talking about now, and Like It was the band that I always thought could explode and become something big. However, I was totally wrong with that.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
It went nowhere.
It would have been nice, but sadly, it didn't happen. So what happened for me was Jerry Sunshine ended up going back to Japan, and Jamie saw this video of me.
Jamie is the singer, kind of leader of Like It.
Yeah. Jamie saw this funny video of me when I got my first Les Paul, and I mean, it was probably from like 1990 or 91 or something. And I had a towel like on my like coming out of my pants because I was afraid that the guitar would touch like a rivet on my belt or something. Right. And I was that's how crazy I was. And it turns out that same day I dropped a piece of metal from an Echoplex, which is an old effect, on top of the guitar. The same day I had the little blanket, but it was ridiculous. So anyway, I do an Ace Frehley guitar solo, at least part of one. And Jamie saw that video and said, you know, our guitar player left to Japan and you should come down and jam with us. And it turned out I couldn't believe it because I never considered myself that great of a guitar player at that point. And I still don't consider myself that great of a guitar player. But Jamie was like, look, you're going to be the lead guitar. And I think Jamie's a much better all around guitarist than I am. But I learned a lot from Jamie and I still play lead. Jamie plays some leads, but and we had been doing a lot of rehearsing as a three piece where Jamie plays bass and I play, you know, the only guitar. But what was great is Dave Messenger, the bassist that I don't know if he's I think he's the original bassist. Bassist I know of in Like It came down and we played as the full normal Like It lineup. And we're going to do a gig at something called Rossfest 2016, which is Jamie's annual party that he puts on, and Jamie and his wife Josephine are putting this party on in Greenwood Lake, New York. It's going to be cool.
So how many times through the years have you played live gigs with Like It?
With Like It, yeah.
Because it hasn't been a lot.
It hasn't been.
I know I saw you with Like It, I want to say twice, but I'm sure you've played more gigs than that.
We played one show for VH1 at like Town Hall or some venue across from like the venue called Town Hall on 44th or 43rd Street, something like that. And that was a cool thing. That was for a MTV Networks event. So that was like, I think that was our first gig. And then I know we played at Arlene's Grocery. We played at the Continental.
I think I saw that gig.
Yeah.
What year would that have been? The Continental.
I don't know.
Going back a decade at least.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Over 10 years ago, without question. I mean, maybe even longer. Yeah. And then we played at like a bunch of different Rossfest events, and we literally played about a year ago at his last annual party. So really, there hasn't been that many gigs.
So seen you play once because I seem to remember seeing you play with Like It at the Continental. But
and you know what, we played at Wetlands once as well. So I got to try to figure out when those gigs were. And there was one gig where Jerry Sunshine was back and we had three guitar players. It was Jerry Sunshine, and Jamie.
Oh wow.
So that was pretty cool. But anyway, if you guess what, guys, you can we're going to play a little song for you guys tonight, but you can go to this new website. It's like-it-online.com. And Like It now has a website. You can listen to four songs that I'm not playing on, and it's Jerry Sunshine. And you can also watch a video that recently just popped up on YouTube by Rebel TV, and it's two songs. It's like one of the songs is like 15 minutes of Like It at Webster Hall.
Wow. Okay.
You know that top room? No, with Jerry Sunshine.
Yeah, I may have been at that gig actually.
Yeah. It's a good video.
Like it at Webster Hall for sure. They did. I remember at that Webster Hall show they did "Let There Be Rock" by AC/DC.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't part of the video, but I know they used to do that song.
Okay, so a lot of people are probably lost, but if you followed that, we're gonna play a song by the classic East Village, New York City band, Like It, which John is now a part of, back in the day when they were playing quite frequently. John wasn't a part of the band. It was this guy, Jerry Sunshine from Japan. And I'm assuming, is it Jerry on guitar on this track?
Yeah, Jerry on lead guitar. And this song is called Super Japanese. Jerry, of course, was from Japan. And Jamie has always had a fascination with all things Asian, and this is a tribute to not only the Japanese, but all people from the continent of Asia.
Well, let's do it. Super Japanese by Like It.
I searched low and so cute and really small. How they built the Chinese wall. Here I go, I made it again. I want and need an Asian. Need a thing that makes me shake. A Japanese, that's what it takes. Here I go, across the sea. She's super Japanese. Super.
All right, so what you just heard right there was Super Japanese by the band Like It, which John was just explaining the history of Like It. And spur of the moment guest here on Talking Metal, the leader of Like It, the singer and guitar player and main songwriter, I believe, too, Jamie Ross. Jamie, how are you, man?
Hello.
Wasn't expecting this, man. So that song we just heard right there, Super Japanese, what year was that recorded? Do you know?
When those three chords were first put into place back in like 93.
Wow.
We called it Thunderbird. Okay. It was Thunderbird, a fine wine indeed.
Right.
And then I renamed it REO. It was REO Speedwagon. Right. And none of these seemed to stick.
Yeah.
And then I realized that there's Japanese girls around. So then all of a sudden the solos and all the little chords made sense.
Right on. And that recording, like, when did you guys actually go in and record that? That was Jerry Sunshine with you on guitar there, right?
Jerry Sunshine, the man from Japan.
Yeah.
We went into a recording studio, 16 track to tape in, I think, Union City.
And what, like 94 we talking, you think?
Yeah, it was a really nice studio in someone's basement who was a high school teacher who just loved the whole let us play forever and do all the tracks. It was great.
Cool. And that stuff never got released officially, did it?
No, I guess not. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And what are some of your favorite memories of that whole scene back there? Because I was just telling John, you know, there were certain bands that really stuck out to me personally, as somebody who used to go to the Continental, go to CBGB's, and Like It was one of those bands. Because, you know, I always felt you guys were doing something a little different than the other bands. Let's start there. Would you agree with that?
I can explain that by saying that when you, let's say, sell out the Continental, if there's such a thing, but right. It kind of happened. It definitely happened.
Yeah.
And you sell it out with the Clowns for Progress or Friends from Degeneration or,
right,
you know, whoever these downtown Lower East Side people were. They just came in and saw us because it was Green Day time, let's say. Mm-hmm. And they just said they have the wrong haircuts and why are they singing about sex? And that was it.
Right. So
that's my take on how great we were to have it packed, but everyone also was like, even though they're tight and great, they have the wrong haircuts and not the new punk rock
thing. So yeah, I guess that's kind of what I was getting at. Like, in a way, you guys were this East Village band. You had like David Peel coming up on stage with you. The place was packed. The shows were explosive, but you were kind of an outsider, right? I mean, you guys, or the band, was kind of an outsider.
Yeah, we had some fans like from bands such as like FF. I saw them once. They were angry punkers that really trashed the place. You know,
right.
I mean, violent, really cool punkers, and they were our biggest fans in the front row. I didn't know, but I guess because we were so angry, also.
Right.
Kind of like the weird, I don't know if the word juxtapose is the right word. Right. I'm going for one, though. We were the new punk rockers because we were actually against the short hair, little haircuts, and the degeneration thing.
Right on.
Or maybe to make it clear, no one in the band was willing to cut their hair.
Yeah.
And we'd dress up in outfits. And you know, and the word poser could be thrown around. But if you thought degeneration weren't posers, then what's a poser?
Right, right.
And they know they're dressing like that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Cool.
Is that answer the question somehow?
Yeah. No, I think so. But, you know, I guess circling back to my first question, what are some of your favorite memories from that, the 90s era of Like It? Any shows that really stick out in your mind? Any moments in time that...
I'm glad you asked it again, because that's what I was trying to get to. CBGB's, Karina Bernard was booking the place.
Right.
Our manager / whoever he was. Had a couple record companies come in. They left during the second song because of our haircuts. And unbeknownst to us, there was a reviewer in the room. We weren't a sloppy glam band. We were tight and heavy, like Judas Priest or something. It wasn't like, you know, we wear makeup, we run around.
Right.
And it was a two-word review in the Village Voice. It said, "Like it." And it just said, "I didn't."
Pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to give them credit for that. Yeah.
And then my manager somehow finagled someone else to show up about 6 months later to CBGB's again, which I, as much as cool CBGB's was, I never felt comfortable on stage, even though the tapes they gave you came out great. It's the monitors. I don't know. I always felt like something was wrong or I wasn't cool enough.
Right. Yeah.
And then the second time around, they said like a two-headed sheep in formaldehyde. I was interested, scorned, but yet couldn't look away.
Yeah.
And I was like, what does that mean? And they said, and just when we thought some girl in leather was going to join them on stage, one did.
Oh, nice.
And that was super Japanese, where she came out with the umbrella and the confetti was inside. And,
yeah, totally.
And she was in a full-blown kimono. And I had like a pedal board that included like the strobe light. I had to press the button and everything. And an Echoplex with a tape machine. And she's opening so all this effort. And all of a sudden they were just like, oh, then some chick jumped up. And I was like, oh, so we're like this lame Motley Crue band with the other lead singer.
Right.
What was that guy's name?
John Corabi.
Yeah, nothing against him. I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
they were just like, just when we thought it was bad enough, and I was like, well, why are you still there? Why is it so packed?
So, what is up with Like It now? Like, what's the future for Like It? What do you envision happening with this band at this point?
Lots of fun.
Lots of fun. Cool. Would you ever go into the studio and record new songs or?
Yeah, I think that's already kind of on the table.
Okay.
Things are going to happen.
Cool. Would they be new songs or would they be re-recording, you know, some of the old classics?
Well, I'm sure there's some behind the stage arguments with John Ostrowski over that.
Right.
But they'll be new ones that never appeared before.
Gotcha. Cool. All right, man.
Something to that effect. But maybe you were looking for something more, a little more like inside the 90s scene type of, not just how my band was perceived. Did you want some other story?
Sure. If you got one, go for it.
It's because you asked it twice. My take. How about this? When the Cat Club and the Rock and Roll Church all suddenly started to disappear, and even the Pool Bar, a lot of those people tried to hang on to that Midtown feel.
Right.
And I'm not saying I was smart enough or even knew. I just accidentally walked by the Continental and find out there was a thing called the Lower East Side. And we lost all our friends because they were like, what are you, a punk band? And I was like, well, where are you guys playing? The Pool Bar?
Yeah. Right.
So it was like the Continental was packed. And then, you know, and then Degeneration, there was hot chicks there.
Yeah.
You know, Sticky and... the LES Stitches, the New York Loose, or whoever.
Right.
And I mean, there was a happening scene going on. People passing around illicit drugs.
Right.
You get in for free, tattooed, you know, psycho sluts from hell, bartenders giving you a free shot.
Right. Yeah.
you know, it was a really good time back then. At the time, I just kind of felt like we were just had the wrong haircut. That's the only thing I can say. I'm sorry. I can't be more insightful.
Cool. Well, Jamie, good talking with you, and thanks for sharing some Like It music with us. Definitely keep.
Would you like to hear from the timekeeper, Mike Lincoln? Or?
Yeah. Cool. Let's hear from him.
Do your listeners know that we're inside like a time cave with like a bunch of Kiss stuff in here with a Kiss pinball machine, Kiss Randall amplifiers?
We didn't go over it in this episode, but yeah, they mostly know that. Yeah.
Ew, this microphone smells like Jamie's breath. Hey, Mark. What's up, bro?
Hey, Mike. How are you, man?
I'm all right, bro. How are you? I haven't seen you since, I think, Christmas time.
Yeah, no, it's been a while. Yeah. Guys, we are talking with Mike Lincoln here on Talking Metal. Yeah. Another kind of spur-of-the-moment interview, which... We're gonna, Mike, probably have to keep to about 5 minutes here, but let me tell you, the first time I met you was probably at one of those Like It gigs. I was a big fan of the band Like It back in the 90s. But another band you played with, which I kind of just wanted to touch upon since John and Jamie already kind of went over the whole Like It thing, was this band Laughing Sky. Can you fill us in a little bit about what Laughing Sky was? Because in some ways it seemed like kind of this Like It side project, but in other ways it was something very different. Tell us about Laughing Sky.
Laughing Sky is a psychedelic band, and we're still kind of, well, we're not together right now, but I think we'll get it going again. It sounds like definitely influenced by like early Pink Floyd, Sid Barrett. We toured all over Europe, California, and it had a, you know, I guess a very psychedelic garage kind of band feel to it, three-piece band. Psychedelic, I keep saying that. A lot of effects on the guitars and kind of trippy stuff. I don't know.
Right, but it was basically you and Jamie, the two.
It was Jamie, I, and Dino Sorbello. He's the brains behind it all. He comes from a band called the Black Violets.
Very cool.
They had a little bit of, we had a Black Violets, you know, and yeah, we put out a couple of albums, and yeah, it's good stuff. If you're into that kind of music, that should say.
Is that stuff available like on iTunes or anywhere online?
I believe so. I'm not sure. That's good. There is still laughingsky.com, and I'm not sure exactly where else it is. But we did release albums, had shirts made, everything. You know, we were out there.
Right.
I forgot the name of the label. I'm sorry offhand.
No worries.
Yes. And
So Jamie Ross played with you in Laughing Sky. He played with you in Like It, which we've been talking to John and Jamie about. So where did you and Jamie first meet?
I was in a band called Sticky, a power pop rock band out of New York City. And we played a gig one time, and Jamie happened to be there, but I didn't know him, and he called up the singer. And I was only the temporary drummer till they found a permanent member. And one day I got a phone call saying, hey, my name is Jamie. I got this band Like It, and we need a drummer. And why don't you come down and check out the music? I said, well, you want me to bring a tape in my play? He goes, no, I saw you play the other night, and I thought you were great. And so I went down and met up with him, and then that's how our relationship started.
Nice. Cool. And what, I know you are a guy who's usually playing with a bunch of different bands. You obviously have Like It going on right now. Is there anything else happening for you musically besides Like It?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, what else? Just maybe a
right now. I'm sorry, Mark. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, run down some of the other stuff you're currently doing as far as bands go.
Right. Like It, you know, we kind of just get together, and we're definitely going to do something. But no, the band I've been in for the past like 7 years, and I've toured all over the place with them, is Electric Frankenstein.
Right.
They're kind of these underground punk legends. They've been around for a long time. And I just played this past Saturday night, about 8 days ago, up in Kingston, New York. We played a gig, but I've toured all over America with them and even Canada. We went all over the world. And, well, we didn't go to Japan. And yeah, that's what I've been doing. Electric Frankenstein. Yeah, they got great artwork. I think the best part about the band, besides the music, is the artwork is brilliant. If you go online to electricfrankenstein.com, brilliant artwork connected with the band.
Cool. And do they have tunes like up on iTunes and stuff? Or?
Oh, certainly. They've got, even if you go on eBay, they're records are for sale, their shirts are for sale, the stuff on iTunes. That's that band really is made it out there. There's the first Tony Hawk video game that he put out. There's an Electric Frankenstein song on that. There was a show on MTV or VH1, Viva La Bam, the opening right. of that show. Yeah, the Electric Frankenstein music was on that. Then there's a movie out called American Psycho 2. I liked it. I thought the movie was great. It's not as good as the first one. But William Shatner is in it, and that Kunis girl, whatever, the one who's with...
Justin Kusher?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no.
And there's a song in that movie, and Electric Frankenstein gets a credit. There's a kid is in a library listening to his headphones, and he's listening to Electric Frankenstein where someone comes up behind and kills him. But,
cool.
Yeah, so, yeah.
What Electric Frankenstein song could we play for the Talking Metal listeners right now?
Demolition Joyride. That's their that's the hit tune from Electric Frankenstein. And Electric Frankenstein is like punk metal. It's not heavy metal and it's not punk. So it's they kind of got that little niche in. It's kind of a heavier punk, but like not total heavy metal.
Gotcha. Cool. And what record does this come off of?
That I can't say. Maybe it's called... You see, okay, the reason why I say that, I'm not sure. Electric Frankenstein's, they have so many records out. Like, really, they got so many compilations and everything. So maybe it's... I don't even know.
Okay. You're not playing drums on this song, but you play it live with them.
No, I play it live. If that track I'm not on. I'm on other tracks, but not that one. The reason why I mentioned that song is because that's their hit song, Demolition Joyride. Yeah.
All right, let's do it right now. This is Demolition Joyride by Electric Frankenstein here on Talking Metal, and we've been speaking with the drummer Mike Lincoln, who plays with Electric Frankenstein, as well as the band Like It, and... Mike, we've done some great shows together, and it's always great playing with you and hanging out with you. So thanks so much for joining us here on Talking Metal.
You're welcome, Mark. Yeah, you're welcome, Mark. And it was great seeing you and hearing your voice again. You've always been a good friend of mine, and I love Talking Metal. And I'm glad to be on the show impromptu today.
Yeah, far overdue. Thanks, Mike. Yeah. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Over and out there, Mark.
Later.
I'm coming! typo.
If you're not talking metal, then obviously you're not talking.
Sorry. Cool. What you just heard was Demolition Joyride by Electric Frankenstein here on Talking Metal. John is back with us, kind of some
hey guys.
Impromptu, is that the word? Impromptu interviews there happening.
Impromptu.
Yeah, yeah. So good stuff.
So what happened, guys, is we... Okay, Mark?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Your picture was freezing up, but... Yeah, great stuff. Always fun to talk with Mike Lincoln. I don't know if he's ever been on the podcast. I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
So long overdue. I'm glad he's joined us, and it was fun talking with Jamie too. Now you and I used to actually in our band, Captain T and Astronomy. We've had numerous bands together, but in Captain T and Astronomy, we used to cover a Like It song. Do you right? Which one did we do?
Oh, wait.
We did LSD is it A-OK? Is that what we did?
No. What did we do? I don't think so. Bump and Grind? No.
No, I thought we did LSD is A-OK.
Oh, maybe we did.
Is that the one that goes...
Yeah. Okay, maybe we did that. But who sang it? Jamie?
Jamie would come up and sing it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So then we did LSD as a kid. Okay.
And we may have done it once without him even, because we played that weird show out in Coney Island once, and I know, I feel like we may have played that and this other song, Let It Shine, without, because usually those two songs we'd have the guest singers, which would be Jamie and Shermie Sheldon from Hollywood Superstars.
That's a great song.
But I feel like I sang them or something at that weird Coney Island show. We played this gig, guys, John and I, literally on the ocean. I'm talking like on the boardwalk. It was like on the ocean. It was so awesome. Fun
that club
time.
Isn't there anymore. And sadly, I just went out to Coney Island and I was looking for it and I couldn't find it. And then I looked it up on the internet and it's not there. It was called Cha-Cha's. Yeah. There's a long history with Cha-Cha's. And the craziest thing is we played it during a hurricane. So not
That's
as
right.
bad as Hurricane Sandy, but it was a actual hurricane. And I insisted that we go. I had two freaking Randall mirrored amps and craziness. I was dressed up in the astronomy outfit. And we probably should have canceled and played another day, but I was like obsessed and I made us drive all the way out to Coney Island in a hurricane. But it was still fun.
Yeah, you got a good memory. I do remember that it was raining and stuff while we were playing there. Not too many people showed up either, but it was a fun gig. And right on the ocean during a hurricane. So there you go.
Right.
Anyways, John, we should probably play Rock You Like a Hurricane now, right?
And just, let's do it.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about, I was telling Mike Lincoln about Mickey or Mikey D, and he's now with the Scorpions, right?
Yeah, Mikey D. I'm sorry. No, Mickey D. Now, Mickey which is D, weird. Okay. Yeah, John and I had this conversation in a podcast. And I ended up editing the whole thing out, but I swear to God, and that I've always called him Mickey D. I've always called him Mickey D. And I was listening to Eddie Trunk's show, and I probably shouldn't say this, but Eddie called him Mikey D. He called him it like Mikey D. like 5 times, and I was like, wow. So for the past 30 some years I've been calling this guy the wrong name and it's not true. His name is, he pronounces it Mickey D, because I went back to some interviews that Mickey D has done. So I don't know what Eddie Trunk was talking about. He may just have had a brain fart that day, but it's definitely Mickey D. And Eddie, at least, maybe it wasn't 6 times, but at least 2 or 3 times he referred to him as Mikey D, but no, Mickey D. Mickey D. They sound kind of similar. Sir. But
We had a whole, that's so funny that we had, you edited that out, because we had that whole conversation.
Yeah, we had it on there, and then I just edited it out. But
it's good. Tightened it up.
Anyways.
This is a loose podcast. This is a loose one.
Yeah. Anyways, John, it's Sunday night, 10 p.m. I got to go to bed.
Oh, I got to go watch Roadies on Showtime.
Oh, okay. You go do that.
Favorite show.
Guys, support the podcast by visiting TalkingMetal.com and using our links to link on over to Amazon. Make your purchases there. You can buy a T-shirt. There's PayPal donations. Another thing you can do, which I always forget to say, but it is very helpful, is go leave a good review for us on iTunes. There's now many different versions of this show. There's the show, the version with no music. There is, I think we post the file three times now with the Spreaker feed and on our feed. So on iTunes, there's actually three different places you can get it now. So leave a review on all those pages on iTunes. And and spread the word. Tell a friend about iTunes. Go like our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter. I just opened a Talking Metal Instagram account, which I posted that picture of you and Papa from Ghost on.
Oh, nice.
And it got like a ton of likes. Even Blasco from Ozzy's band liked it. So, so I thought that was cool. And I think he followed us too. He followed us and then he liked that photo. So good stuff. That's a great picture of you and Papa.
Thank you.
From what, a year or two ago, probably.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was in Texas.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. This is Rock You Like a Hurricane by the Scorps. John, have a good night.
You too, Mark. Take care. Thanks, all you guys. Bye.
Really loud. The gate is buried. Scratch my skin. So what is wrong with me?